Yeah, I mean, this is something that honestly I never thought I'd be living through, and it's tough. Our season has been cut short, basically smack dab in the middle, and we were kind of rolling at the time.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. On the line today is Steve Olick. Steve is the head strength and conditioning coach for the Binghamton Devils, the top minor league affiliate of the NHL's New Jersey Devils. Among the topics Steve will discuss are adapting during the coronavirus pandemic, collaborating with NHL staff, and conditioning strategies for low game minute players. So let's get started. Here's your host, head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to this edition of the First Beat Sports podcast. And first and foremost, Steve, thanks for being here. It's great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I really appreciate it.
And always, we like to start by giving our listeners some background into our guests. It'd be great if you could break down kind of your journey that has led up to the Binghamton Devils.
First and foremost, a good friend of mine, Cal Dietz, would ask if this is going to be a long story, but I'm going to try to make it a short one for you. So I got my undergrad in kinesiology from Penn State University, and then later got my master's in sports management from California University of Pennsylvania. I've completed internships at Penn State, Robert Morris University in Pittsburgh, and the University of Minnesota. For 2 years, I spent at the University of Findlay in a small assistant role. I was completing my master's online. And then from there, I moved back to Minnesota to take an assistant role at Minnesota State University Mankato, which is about an hour south of the Twin Cities, for those that don't know. And then back to Minneapolis to get a full-time assistant position at the University of Minnesota, working with men's and women's hockey, baseball, men's track and field. And then I was there for roughly a year and a half. And in January 2015, this takes us, I got an assistant position at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, and was mainly in charge of men's ice hockey. And then from there, I landed my current position with New Jersey Devils, working primarily with their top development team in the American Hockey League in Binghamton, New York, the Binghamton Devils. And I've also spent some time volunteering at Quinnipiac University and the University of Wisconsin.
All right. So you got a few frequent flyer miles there.
Oh, yeah. A couple times moving.
Cool. Well, and first off, we're obviously recording this during some fairly unprecedented times. How has the virus affected the program with what you've been able to do with Binghamton?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that honestly I never thought I'd be living through. And it's tough. Our season has been cut short, basically smack dab in the middle. And we were kind of rolling at the time. So just a lot of uncertainty in the air right now. But as far as working with the guys right now, communication has been the biggest thing. Myself and my assistant, John Williams, along with our medical staff, reach out to players daily and see how they're doing, anything new, like can we help with anything? And then we've also, myself along with the staff in New Jersey, we've sent out at-home workouts for the players and try to provide them with making sure they know like what equipment they need to have, if they need any help with nutrition or supplements or anything like that. So really just it all comes down to trying to give them the most information that we can since we can't be there with them. And then at the end of the day also like we care about these guys a lot because they are under contract with us. But more importantly, like this time more than ever, it's important to know that, I mean, these guys are people too. And so like we want to be there for them, like if they need literally anything at all.
So yeah, on that same topic, I'm actually always interested, what platforms are you actually using to communicate and transfer the information to the athletes?
Initially, it was just basic workouts that myself and Devin McConnell and Joe Lawrence, New Jersey, put together, and we just sent out in like a mass email. We use the platform Teamworks to do a lot of our communication with our guys and staff as a whole. So we put some of it on there, but we just we're starting back up with using Team Builder, which is going to be new to us for like being the main platform that all our workouts and everything are going to be on.
Okay, cool. And how receptive have the guys been? I mean, is compliance pretty good with most?
It's honestly still in the developmental stages. Like we're going to be rolling it out here probably in about a week or so. This decision was probably made in the last couple of weeks, and we're just fine tuning everything to make sure everything's uploaded and ready to go for the guys. But I mean, being an athlete is obviously their job. Like, they crave information. They want access to anything that's going to help them get better or stay in shape or get stronger or anything. So I think they'll be pretty receptive to it.
Sounds like you really got a good setup there for as far as what they need to do, like in the gym or physically with those programs. And I really like that you add, you know, that they're still people, you know, they're not just athletes. So you still just want to be there for them.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you spend 6, sometimes 7 days a week with these guys for 6 hours a day and even longer on road trips. And I mean, that's one of the best parts about this job is like the relationships you get to build with these guys. So absolutely, you have to look at them in that light first and foremost.
Yeah, definitely. And so actually, we started to work back when you joined Yale. Was that 2015?
Yes, I came in January 2015, like halfway through that season.
Okay, yeah. So we started to work then. You've experienced working with both the collegiate and the pro level athletes. Kind of what's the main differences you've seen between the two as far as putting together a strength and conditioning program for them?
I mean, by far the biggest has to be college has way more opportunities to train. You have a pretty solid schedule of most of the time you're going to be playing 2 games a week on Friday, Saturday. Occasionally that changes, but not that much. So you'll have in a typical setup, you could lift on a like Monday, Wednesday, and you can get some serious training done. And even the day before a game on a Thursday, you can implement some more power, explosive movements and everything to actually see gains throughout the season, depending on like other variables and everything like that. Whereas in professional level, we have to make the most out of our opportunities to train. The goal is to get 3 lifts per week, but that can change drastically. So on like Monday to start the week, that could be our biggest lift of the week. And then we might have a game on Wednesday and game Friday, Saturday. So, and if we're lucky and we're at home on Wednesday and Saturday, then we'll get some workouts in after the games. But that being said, I mean, for those, it's drastically stripped down and we have to think about like, what are our big rocks in the program? Like, what do we need? What do these guys need to get exposed to on a micro dosing level? And so we just throw together something small after those games to at least expose these guys to the qualities that they need to get exposed to kind of maintain everything throughout the season.
So definitely a big change there as far as with the college that you had games Friday, Saturday versus 3 a week with the AHL.
Yeah. And I mean, 3 a week is kind of like on a, I would say normalcy, but we can also play 3 games in 3 days. So from a training standpoint, like, I mean, even in our biggest lift of the week, I'd say the volume is down drastically from what you could potentially do in college just because of our volume is our schedule.
Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned earlier, Cal Dietz, and I know you're kind of a disciple from his program with your time at Minnesota. Have you been able to implement his triphasic philosophies with the Devils?
In season, I really have not. We have gone through a couple cycles, like very small doses at the beginning of the last couple seasons with implementing just a little bit of eccentric and isometric work just to kind of expose the guys to that like before everything gets going. But it's, I mean, with just our schedule and everything, it would be very hard to do it in season. But the off-season program from New Jersey does include like a triphasic cycle to make sure that we're kind of rebuilding from the end of the season and making sure everybody's training properly in those 3 phases and then moving forward with our program from there. Definitely easier to do in the off-season.
Okay, yeah. And I know we touched on this a little bit, but with such an unforgiving schedule where we just said, you know, 3 games a week, possibly 3 games in 3 days, 70 plus games in a season, how do you build this kind of in-season training program?
I mean, there's so many variables that come into it. Like talking about the schedule, like working in college, it was 35, 38 games, maybe max, and even less if like for when I was working at Yale in the Ivy League because they start later. And our game in the AHL is 76 games, 82 in the NHL, not including playoffs. So it really comes down to having a read on where guys are at, paying attention to all of our numbers that we use from our metrics with a system like First Beat. And then we also use Kinexon GPS platform to get other information on guys. But then also paying attention just to to smaller things like, where was our last game at? Are we coming off of a long road trip? Is it a short road trip? What's our next couple of days look like? If we just played a 3-3 Friday, Saturday, Sunday, off on Monday, and then we have to travel again on Tuesday to go somewhere Wednesday, I mean, that's going to vastly impact what we're doing in the weight room. So it really comes down to trying to get on top of it and plan ahead and really look at what all these factors are that could have a negative impact as far as getting the most out of your players, and then just trying to see what makes sense as far as fitting your training in.
Mm-hmm. And on this same note, when we talk about 70 plus games a season, how do you deal with kind of the discrepancy when you have your high minute versus low minute players? A lot of coaches I work with, they're going to hold additional conditioning for your lower minute players to try to balance out that difference. How do you guys deal with that?
Yeah, they do. So, I mean, as we go through the week, everybody is kind of on the same page. Like, let's start like on Monday. So we kind of approach it the same way. They'll do the same training of the team. And if we approach a game day on a Wednesday and they're not in the lineup, they'll have an extra on-ice conditioning session with the coach. And then as far as the training aspect goes, I usually look at it from how hard is the on-ice session going to be. And I usually do that through trim per minute, mostly, just to get an idea of where they're on ice conditioning intensity is versus the game that they would have been playing. And then after that, with our training, I kind of see what our schedule is going to be like Thursday and then Friday, Saturday to see like what exactly I can expose them to in the weight room that Wednesday. And then moving forward, same kind of process on over the weekend on a Friday, knowing that they might be in the lineup on Saturday. I see how hard that skate is with the coaches. And it might just be like, again, like a smaller volume, intensity is kind of moderate workout on Friday. But then Saturdays, if we're off on Sunday, then we can actually get some work done with the guys that aren't playing as far as the training goes. And then if they do end up playing, but they're still on the lesser minute side after the game, we usually have a bike workout on the board for them to kind of make up for any of like the lost minutes that they didn't have.
Okay, nice. And another challenge that you have in relation to this is being an affiliate with the New Jersey Devils. So kind of how do you cooperate and work alongside them?
I mean, I feel really lucky being with the organization that I'm with because the staff up there, our VP of athlete care, Chris Stackpole, the head strength conditioning coach, Joe Lawrence, and the director of performance science and reconditioning, Devin McConnell, they're unbelievable guys to work with. We don't really have a set schedule of when we communicate, but it's more so just naturally through, hey, like I have a question about this, or they want to know something, or I'll be in discussions with Joe and Devin about what some of the trends that I'm seeing with our data, like everything like that. I mean, it's very easy. I would say it's like kind of structured, but not really, just because we're all on the same page. So it's awesome having a staff like that where you can just shoot them a text or call them up and end up in a discussion about something that's ultimately helping our guys down here in the American League, but like the organization as a whole.
And I'm assuming it's pretty smooth transition with those players, with both Binghamton and the New Jersey both using First Beat.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing that we try to do on a pretty good level is kind of keep everything remotely similar when it comes to the environments, especially with First Beat. Like you go up or you go down, you know that the system's going to be in place and we're going to be using the heart rate straps. But then training wise too, like, I mean, we try to keep our training library somewhat similar within our own creative differences, just to make sure that if guys go up, they're doing the same exercise with the same name that they were doing when they come down, and vice versa.
Yeah, sounds like that communication is a really huge factor there.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Let's hop onto the quick fire round. I'm going to throw some questions your way and see if we can get some answers.
Okay.
All right. Sporting hero growing up.
I grew up in Pittsburgh and played hockey myself, so Jaromir Jagr was my favorite player.
All right. Biggest mentor in career to date.
This is a tough one because I feel there's a million people I feel like I can mention here, but Cal Dietz, I would say, is my biggest mentor.
Guilty music pleasure.
On my phone right now, you'd probably find either EDM or country. A little bit too different directions.
All right. If you could be a pro in one sport, what would it be?
Hockey.
Yeah. I kind of figured that, but I still got to drop the question out there.
No, that's legit.
Overtime win or 5-0 win?
Overtime win. Maybe the coaches won't agree with me, but I'd say there's nothing like kind of that rush and acceleration and like adrenaline and jolt of energy you get whenever like it could go either way. Everything's on the line and then you pull it out.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you probably celebrate that until you see the training load numbers, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Chosen superpower.
So when I was younger, Batman was my favorite superhero. So I guess like if I could be rich enough to just become one, but if I had to pick a superpower, then it'd probably be to teleport.
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. You know, what literally Batman's superpower is money, right?
Yeah. I mean, the guy was rich enough to become a superhero.
All right. Yeah, let's hop over to First Beat a little bit more.
Sure.
You had a pretty cool situation as far as both places when you came in. Yale had First Beat in place. Binghamton had First Beat in place. How easy was that transformation? And then any differences from how it was implemented?
Yeah, like I couldn't have asked for a better situation. To like when I came into Yale, I had used heart rate monitors a little bit, but like I had an idea of what was going on. But at Yale, it was definitely a learning process for me to get used to it. And then coming into an organization that was already using the same system, nonetheless, was definitely something that I was excited about. And yeah, I would just say some differences is that during my time at Yale, I was kind of developing and continuously learning like the system that I thought was going to be the best for kind of seeing where the guys were at. And so I already had that idea when I came in. And then I was able to talk with Joe Lawrence, who is the head guy, who's our head strength coach. And we just like, he kind of gave me some information that he had that maybe I hadn't really thought about before. So it was really just like continuously building on my understanding of heart rates and using First Beat.
And it was a wild enough situation too that, and I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better one, that naturally Coach Dennehy, who we were working with at Merrimack, steps over to Binghamton. And so he already understood First Beat as well.
Yeah, that was, I mean, yeah, definitely huge. Couldn't have been luckier to have a coach who is already familiar with it and who is very interested in technology and anything that's going to help make the best decisions to make sure our team is ready to go.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and walk us through how you use First Beat on like a daily, weekly basis?
So on a daily basis, I mean, we use it for all of our practices, games, extra skates. And we're really just looking at a couple of things. Like the biggest one, I would say, is trim. And we're using that as a measure of volume and just kind of see like what type of trends we have for our practices throughout the week. Typically, we're shooting for a trim number that's going to fall between, I mean, depending on the time of the practice, roughly like 60, 70. But along with just trim by itself, we're also looking at trim per minute for an intensity level, which is going to give us an idea of, as the week goes on, are we kind of getting these guys exposed to an intensity level similar to the game? So long and short of it, we're looking for the closer you get to a game, you want that volume to start to trend down and your intensity to ramp up.
And so it's kind of on the same idea that a lot of people are using the time in zones, right? Because there used to be, I would see a lot of discrepancies in what the game was. You'd see a ton of time in the red versus what the practice was, where there'd just be minimal, if not even zero time actually reached in the red zone.
Yeah. And I mean, that's also player dependent too on how those guys function. But we try to at least like control one thing, and that's the time and the volume of our practice before a game, so that when we pick the drills that are going to get them exposed to those higher heart rate zones, to just make sure that when it comes time to drop the puck for a game, that it's not a shock to the system, that they're ready to go.
Mm-hmm. And kind of if we dive a bit deeper into this, and we already mentioned you came into a great situation because Coach Dennehy was already familiar, but the strength coaches are always asking, how do I present this data to the head coach? What would you recommend? How would you tell them to approach a coach with First Beat data?
If you're coming into a brand new situation, I mean, you got to stick to something basic. Like you don't want to get wrapped up in information that's going to get you lost. And you certainly don't want the coach to get turned off by too much information. If it would be as simple as just measuring trim, that's it, like not even going trim per minute or anything like that, I think that's better than nothing, because you're at least getting some type of feedback on what your team's doing. And then discussions with the coach make sure they understand what we're measuring, that it's measuring some type of workload, more specifically volume, and that you're using that to just see fluctuations and what type of volume the guys are getting exposed to. And then as you would go on, you and the coach start to get a better understanding, and those conversations get easier, then you can probably start to throw in things like time in aerobic versus time in anaerobic, or trim per minute, or even position difference in trim, stuff like that. So yeah, start basic and then just kind of ramp up as the understanding starts to get better.
And you mentioned like trim per positions. Actually, I wanted to hop onto that. Do you see any differences in the positions? And then also on the same line, what are some game numbers I would see from defense, forward, or goalie?
Yeah, there's definitely differences in position, and some of this is controlled by, I guess, the numbers, like your amount of defensive players versus the amount of forwards on the ice, or like the roster at the time of the game is going to kind of depend on guys' rest periods and stuff like that. But for game specific, like the craziest one is the goalies that I've seen quite a bit. The goalies literally can stay, their trip will be 300 plus. I've seen almost like 350 or something like that. Like they are literally living in the yellow and the red zones the entire game, with the exception of intermissions. It's kind of impressive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may not know, but is this just the stress of the position? Is this just all the extra gear they have on? Is this just psychological? What's the reason for 350 trim for a goalie?
That's very on the higher end. There's games where it's like 280, something like that. So it's very game dependent, but also at the same time, it could just be that they're on for that whole time they're on the ice and they need to be like locked in. In a game, it's different than practice. You have adrenaline going. There's a lot more on the line. Mentally, you're aware of it, obviously, which is going to change your breathing and everything like that, how you respond. So I think it's kind of a combination of all of that.
Oh, cool. And what are the numbers do you have like for defense or forwards on those games?
Defense could be, roughly, let's say on average, like 160 in that range. Again, might be more, might be less. I've had some defensemen that hit close to 200. And then forwards, it also like, again, depends on where they're at in the lineup. Like a top end forward could be in the same range. If anything, I would say like on average, just kind of scrolling through, the forwards would maybe be like 10, 15 trim points less than the defense, just to ballpark. Like they're not identical, but the D is definitely more, but not by like a ton usually.
So we talked about positions. Do you see a difference between like the younger players versus some seasoned veterans?
It kind of depends. It's so person specific. I mean, there's guys, and I don't know if the age really has anything to do with it, more so is like how they're built, but some guys will go balls to the wall every shift of the game and they won't touch above 90%. And then other guys are still going balls to the wall and they're living above 90%. So it's more so, I don't know if it's really age dependent necessarily. It's kind of absolutely like crazy how much it takes to get them above 90%.
So it's just individualized and more or less physiology and conditioning then.
Yeah. And then ultimately, you can really go down a rabbit hole with that. And if you want to get specific in regards to training, but yeah, that's for another day.
Yeah. So communication is key when it comes to learning from the data. What has the buy-in been like from the players themselves?
I think it's been great. I mean, with these guys, they always want something. Whenever they approach you about it or you try to kind of have those discussions, you could go in with like a full arsenal of information, but it honestly could be something as simple as how many calories did I burn that game? And then from there, maybe you can move forward with like explaining to them like the peaks and valleys of the report after a game and kind of showing them like, yeah, like that was a really hard shift. Here's how I can tell, like, here's why, here's where you were. And this is like how long it took you to recover, something like that. If you give the guy something useful, something that's going to help them, they're going to be all over it. Some guys might want to know their trim number every single day. That's awesome. Some guys might just want to know how many calories they burn because it's going to give them an idea of like what they think they can eat to refuel after. That's awesome too. So it's really just kind of seeing what that player responds to and kind of making sure that they get that information.
So it seems like you're really kind of open source with the data. It's there for the players to use if they want, and they can obviously ask more and make something out of it if they choose to.
Oh, 100%. Some guys will say, hey, what was my trim number? And I would tell them, they'd be like, all right, sounds good. Because over time they start to understand and know like what's normal for them. Other guys will come over to my computer and want to have a discussion about where they were for that practice or that game or anything. And I'm more than happy to do that too.
That's great. It's nice to hear such compliance and communication going on. Okay, before we go, actually I had one last question that may help some of our listeners. What would your top piece of advice be for any strength and conditioning coaches looking to make their way into the industry?
So I'm kind of going to go with two here, if that's all right. The first one would be, when I started out at Minnesota as an intern, someone there that was hanging out in Cal's office told me that to get a notebook and write everything down that I saw, ask questions about anything. And I really took that to heart. And so first and foremost from that, I would say that in this field, like, you can never stop learning. There's always something that you can read that is going to help you get better at your profession. I mean, there's topics on, I mean, you can read about strength conditioning, you can read about psychology, you can read about developing relationships, coaching specific. I mean, everything. Like, you should never stop learning, never stop trying to get better. And kind of going along with that is, don't be afraid to put yourself out there and network and meet coaches. We had a sports science conference put on by our ownership group, HBSE, and 2 years ago. And someone, one of the speakers, said during his talk that connections can build a career. And that quote's like really kind of stuck with me. And I've used it multiple times in some talks because I really believe that that's the truth. Like, up and coming strength coaches now have it way better than when I first started out 10 years ago with like Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff. Like, guys are available more than ever, and strength coaches are always willing to talk and discuss and to teach. So don't be afraid to put yourself out there, because you never know where a connection could take you, really.
Nice. No, I really like that. Connections can build a career. Then also, hey, I got to ask, I'm just out of curiosity, do you still have that notebook you started out with?
The notebook itself is definitely somewhere, but I typed it up a while ago because I was like, I'm going to lose this thing. So I better type it up. And it's just kind of funny. Like, I went back through when I typed it, and some of the notes and stuff, like referencing PRI and just some other different methods and everything. This was back in 2010, and like, fast forward to 2015, 2016, 2017, like, these are things that I'm using today. And so it's just kind of funny, like, writing this stuff down. Like, I know it's important. I don't completely understand it, but I know it's important. And then just like going back and seeing it, it's just makes me laugh a little bit.
Yeah. Pass the test of time for sure.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, that'll be it for this episode. Again, thank you, Steve, for sparing some time for us during these uncertain times, and really enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, Ben.
If you like this episode and want to hear more episodes, make sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533, or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.